listening to Making a Difference About Domestic Violence and Abuse with host Shireen Rice on the CWR Talk Network.
Good evening. This is Shireen Rice with Making a Difference About Domestic Violence. My goal for this show is to educate and help in the healing journey for those that are suffering from domestic violence. I'm pre-recording this show tonight, so I cannot accept any calls. So hold the calls for this week, and we'll be back with you on next week for a regular showtime. If you're listening tonight, I would like to, and you'd like to get in touch with me, you can email me, though, at Shireen, C-W-R, so that's S-H-A-R-E-E-N-E-C-W-R at gmail.com. I would love to hear from you. I want to do a shout-out tonight to Karma in Southern Oregon. I want to thank you, sister, for all your hard work that you do for our domestic violence sisters. And so I would also like to remind everyone that our show is every Thursday now at 6 p.m. Pacific, 7 Mountain, and 8 Central. My show can also be heard on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play if you subscribe to those services. If you want a direct link to those services, you can go to our CWR homepage, which is on our website, cwrtalknetwork.com, and click on that logo for that service. If at any time you experience a trigger by the topic that's going to be shared tonight, please call the national hotline at 1-800-799-SAFE or 1-800-799-7233, and we'll be right back for a public service from our public service announcement.
Unexpected reactions to smart financial decisions brought to you by feedthepig.org.
Well, I finally did it. I improved my credit score.
You're kidding, right?
No.
How are we supposed to be the bad boys of electrosynth pop if you're out there being responsible? The band is about to be discovered. This is our year.
Yeah, you've been saying that for a while now.
You think anyone in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame was worried about their credit score?
I never really thought that.
Of course they weren't. Rock stars aren't supposed to think about that kind of stuff. We're supposed to think about how many guitars we've smashed, write aggressively sensitive power ballads, start questionable fashion trends, tragically break up and blame creative differences.
All right, just... I thought maybe it was time to take control of my finances, you know? Start using a budget. Get out of debt. Set some goals.
A budget? Debt? Set some goals? Listen, I knew that we'd have our creative differences, but I was hoping they'd involve a little more scandal.
When it comes to financial stability, don't get left behind. Get tools and tips for saving at feedthepig.org. This message brought to you by the American Institute of CPAs and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Making a Difference About Domestic Violence and Abuse with your host, Shireen Rice, on the CWR Talk Network.
Welcome back to Making a Difference About Domestic Violence. So let me tell you a little bit about our guest tonight. I'm speaking too fast. Stacey Womack is the founder and executive director of Abuse Recovery Ministry Service. ARMS is what we call it for short. She started this ministry for those who have experienced abuse in 1997 out of her home. Since then, ARMS has expanded across the United States to Mexico and as far away as Kenya. And she's going to share a little bit more about that. ARMS provides multiple programs serving the whole family, including domestic violence intervention for men and women. Stacey is a respected member of the Domestic Violence Council in multiple counties and has served on the executive committee of these councils. Stacey is also the recipient of the 2012 Judge Harold Award for Outstanding Collaborative Efforts to End Family Violence in Multnomah County, Oregon. Stacey and her husband, Jerry, have been married for 38 years. They have 6 kids and 9 grandkids. And let me get her out of the green room. Welcome, Stacey.
Thanks for having me.
I'm glad you can hear me. Sometimes that doesn't happen. Okay, so my first question for you is, it will revolve around, let's start with her journey. Can you tell us a little bit about her journey? It's your program called Her Journey, right?
Right. It's our largest program. It's kind of the cornerstone of the work that we do. It is a free 15-week recovery program for women who have experienced or are experiencing domestic abuse. And it's very trauma-informed, meaning that there's no intake, The women can just call, find out where locations are. They can begin at any point because our leaders lead the groups year-round. So they can join at any time, bring a support person with them if they're, as long as they're female. And they don't even have to give us their real name. They don't have to talk in the group if they don't want to. So we've just removed as many barriers as we possibly can to make it just a really safe place. And each lesson that we go through deals with a different topic that women who've experienced abuse have experienced themselves personally. And so it's called Her Journey because it's a journey through their healing process that we walk alongside them while they go through it. So it's been extremely successful. We've probably served over 22,000 women since we started in 1997 with this program.
Well, that's great. And I went to Her Journey, and it's religious. It has a religious format, right? Or does it always have a religious format?
Yes, yes. Oh yeah, it's we're a Christian nonprofit, so we're dealing with the issue from a biblical perspective. Although we have women of multiple faiths or no faith at all who've attended and found it extremely helpful, so we're really open to serving everybody. But regardless, it's always presented from a Christian perspective.
Right, and it revolves around Psalms 23, if I remember correctly.
Yes, it's kind of loosely connected to Psalms 23. So each lesson we kind of deal with a piece of that scripture and tie it into the title and kind of topic of the evening.
Yeah.
So
I remember
we have classes that
go ahead.
I said, you know, so for instance, we'll have classes where we talk about like understanding God's heart around the issues of abuse or mm-hmm. around anger or depression or submission versus oppression. Learning how to begin to dream again. And we just have a lot of different topics that are just really helpful.
Yes, that's true. And one thing I really liked about this is it was knowledge-based. It was to help in many aspects of your life and moving forward, to help you move forward. And that's where a lot of victims struggle is moving forward.
Yes, and you know, probably the most common thing we hear from victims and survivors is that how alone they feel when they come to us. They just feel like that no one understands, and that they're just really alone in this journey. And when they come to group, they realize they're not alone, and so that's a very encouraging thing. And so, the most common things that women say when they complete the program are they say things like, "Now I know that I'm truly loved and valued." And because of that, they make different choices. They set boundaries, and they begin to live out their dreams.
Yeah. Yeah, I have to tell you, I had no one else to nowhere else to go. And so I was very blessed that the local DV agency for battered women there in Roseburg offered it as an option. She goes, if you're a woman of faith, you might enjoy this. And so I said, I will take anything because I couldn't find a therapist. My head was messed up. Yeah. I couldn't find a therapist. I had one that would let me talk, but he goes, I don't understand it, but you can talk and that, you know, and I'll help you work through things if you need to. And, but he wasn't helpful at all. And so, you know, it was the only place I ever went where I felt completely free to be able to share whatever I wanted to. And I knew it wasn't going to come back on me. I knew that it was
right.
People were there that understood that you know, you could listen, that would listen to you. And I probably didn't talk for the first two or three classes because I was just too upset about everything. And a lot of times that is the case. But I will tell you, I had some totally aha moments all the way through it. I think my biggest aha moment was the part about going through the valley of death. And I swear it was a spirit said, you're trying to get around the valley of death and not go through the valley of death. And so I'm like, that is something I have to think about. You know, because we all try to go, I'm going to fix this, and I'm not going to have to do all these things that people are saying I'm going to have to do. I'm just going to fix it, and I'm going to be able to get around all the steps that I'm really going to have to go through. And you actually have to go through all those steps. step, especially I call it the grief step.
Right. It's kind of like grieving. If you don't, if you can't, you have to go through the grieving process. You can prolong it if you don't do it, but you have to go through the grieving process at some point.
Right. Yeah, and you might skip through them back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. But what we do, and you'd agree with this, what we do go through is a grieving process because of the fact that we lose a companion, and if we ever had that companion. But,
and a whole lot of other things,
Yes. Okay, so tell me, tell us how successful her journey has been.
It's been very successful. We even have a lot of our leaders. We have about 85 Her Journey leaders that we train. They're volunteer leaders. And many of them have gone through the program themselves and several years down the road are in a healthy place where they can lead. So that's been really awesome. I've had women who come into the program who were just so broken and didn't believe in themselves and believe the lies that their abuser was telling them, how they were stupid and couldn't do anything. And I've seen many of those women enter college and get straight A's and realize that they're actually not stupid and actually complete college and just do amazing things. I've watched women come in almost just physically dying from the stress and the heartache of abuse to coming alive while they sit in front of us. And I think that's why so many of our volunteer leaders lead for so many years. We have leaders that have been leading for more than a decade because there's so much hope in the work we do. We get to literally watch women come back to life right in front of us. And it keeps us all coming back. And it's really unusual in the domestic violence community to not have high turnover in most agency happens because domestic violence is a very difficult topic.
It is.
But in our Her Journey program, there is so much hope that comes out of it that so many of our leaders and women just, they want to keep coming. And they just keep doing the work because they see the good that it's doing. And they're just always there. They're just amazing women who sometimes do more than one group a week. So we're just so blessed. They are the arms of arms. All the women who partner with us. So they really do the work. And it's just an amazing thing that no matter who's leading it, we still have the same outcomes with the different leaders who are leading it.
Yeah, that's great.
Pretty exciting.
It is exciting. Yeah. And I think I read that you've had, over 20,000 go through it, or was it more?
Yeah, well, we were pulling our numbers in from last year, and so we think we're closer to around 22,000 now.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Now, tell me a little bit about Mankind. I've heard a little bit about it, but I really don't know too much about it.
Okay. So there's a spectrum that you've got victims on one side and you've got primary aggressors on the other side. And then there's kind of a spectrum in between where you could have secondary aggression because I'm going to talk about virtue as well. But that side is considered intervention work, working with people who have used abusive behaviors. And abusive behaviors are things that a person learns to use that work for them. And it may be because they grew up in it or they just learned at a certain age that it got them what they wanted. It became a pattern. So abuse isn't about any particular behavior, but it's a pattern of behaviors to gain power and control in an intimate relationship. So when we started Her Journey, you know, I mean, obviously the need is great, but it wasn't very far into that we realized, what are we doing to help the men who are using these abusive behaviors? So it's kind of like if all we're doing is catching the people who are falling off a cliff and nothing's being done to stop the people who are pushing the people off the cliff, we're not really stopping the problem. So my husband and I began training for domestic violence intervention or batterers intervention or perpetrator treatment. It's called, depending on what your state you're in, it's called different things. But it's domestic violence intervention. And the programs vary from state to state a little bit, but they all cover basically the same concepts of helping men who are using these behaviors to recognize what abuse is. That isn't just hitting, isn't just a black eye, because a lot of people only define it that way. But there's a whole host of controlling behaviors that play into their use of abusive behaviors and their beliefs behind why they do what they do actually promote their behavior. So their beliefs give them permission to behave the way they're behaving. So we really work on that in group. These groups are groups where they have to come to an intake. They pay for that. They pay for the weekly sessions. They have to do homework, read books, participate in group discussion. And we are, it's a very highly accountable group. So every week they have to share the types of abuse they've done since they were 18. They have to give us the past examples and the types of abuse in that example they give. And then they also have opportunity to share the new ways, the healthy ways that they're learning to handle, to do things. So we allow up to 12 men in a group. They're male-female co-facilitated. Not every state requires that. Oregon does. We really believe in this model. I believe it's much more successful than a single facilitator in a group. We get to model share power. Plus, the men often have issues with women, so having a woman in group who's in a position of power, challenges some of those beliefs they have. And then we also get to make sure that a feminine and voice is heard, that the victim voice is always heard. And we're very unique as an organization because most organizations either only work with victims or survivors, or they work with perpetrators of abuse. And we do both. And so we have this really broad spectrum of understanding of abuse. And then in between, you've got these secondary aggressors. And so we have a program for women that is not quite as long as our men's group, but pretty close. They're 9 months to a year, depending on how they do in the program. But, you know, a lot of women who've been raised in abuse, who have learned the behavior, or they've been in an abusive relationship for so long, they just began to dish it back out. And they're using abusive behaviors, but they're not necessarily gaining power and control. But it doesn't make the abuse okay. So whether a man or a woman is using abuse, whether it's a one-time event or a pattern of behavior, it's not okay. So with the men, they generally are our primary aggressors. They're the ones who have the power in the relationship. Physically,
right.
They're usually bigger. Society gives them more power. The faith community gives them more power. And whether they want it or not, even good men have more power than most women. So it's helping them understand that and not to misuse it and what they can do to actually influence their own sphere of influence around them. And we've been doing that group since 2001 for the men. And we have some men who work very, very hard and who really make significant changes. 1 year in group really doesn't fix it all, but it's a really good start. And so it's a kind of a lifelong journey. But if we can really help them to also understand that God loves and values them so they can let go of some control, let go of that control and trust God, then we've seen men whose relationships have made it, or if they haven't made it, the women share with us that he's no longer using abusive tactics. He's not using the children. The sharing of the children is no longer a power struggle. So for those men who do the very, very hard work, it's really exciting. Now, there's a lot of men who will make some change. The majority of our men, I would say, would fall into this group of they make some change, but often not enough to actually save the relationship. Or it may be that she just cannot give her heart away one more time, and we understand that. And we help her to grieve through that that process. But for the men, there's a small group on one end who make no changes at all. But all the men gain new knowledge because the very first class we talked about all the types of abuse and really a broad spectrum of abuse. So every man gains something from coming to the program, but whether or not he changes is really up to him. We have no control over that. So we meet the state standards. So we receive court-mandated men from the Department of Human Services. We also have about a 25% voluntary caseload of guys. Often they're wife mandated, or their pastors or their counselors have sent them our way. And while they have maybe not been arrested, they're really not any different than the rest of the guys. Most of the men in the group are not, in our groups, aren't generally your hardened criminals. Most of those guys don't usually choose a faith-based program because that program is also faith-based. The men don't have to be active in their faith, but they at least need to believe God exists to be appropriate for the group. And it's, you know, for the men who have made changes, it's really exciting. I have a man who completed 7 years. He went through the program 7 years ago, was in it for a couple of years as a voluntary client. His wife left and moved a couple thousand miles away from him and with their children. And he came to our program and made great change. And God restored their relationship. And he just finished a book that just been put out on the market talking about, you know, being an angry man and how his process for walking through that healing process from that was. So that's exciting to see the men that we work with begin influencing male culture, because it really is going to take men standing up to other men to really make significant change. But I believe that what we're doing in our Mankind program is a really powerful thing. And it's some of the most difficult work we do because the guys are the most resistant.
Yes.
But very, very important. And then our women who come in to Virtue, which is our women's intervention group, all of them have, I would say 99.9% of all the women who come to us have been victims of abuse as well as have used abusive behaviors. Sometimes they lean more towards the victim side of the spectrum. Sometimes they lean more towards the primary aggressor side of the spectrum. If they lean more towards the victim side of the spectrum, they have a harder time relating in group, but they still gain really good tools of handling conflict and standing up for their value and setting appropriate boundaries. And for our women who lean more towards primary aggression, they talk very much like our male aggressors. They have the same belief systems as our male aggressors. They say the same things. So and the same thing with a male secondary aggressor. They sound very much like our female secondary aggressors. And even male victims actually use a lot of the same verbiage that female victims use. So it's an interesting dynamic for us. But in the Virtue class, we do a lot of the same things. There's an intake, there's fees to pay, there's homework to do, books to read, that type of thing. But we, in that book, we're very carefully balancing their victim recovery work with holding them accountable for their abusive behaviors. And the women come out of there feeling more empowered because they come into group feeling like everybody else has control of them emotionally. And as they learn that they are the only ones who are in control of them and they don't get hooked into those arguments anymore, usually they're with a primary aggressor who is not happy that they're making these changes. And oftentimes these women will end those really unhealthy relationships because of that. And sometimes because they're making changes, their husbands or boyfriends will enter the men's program as they see change in her. So it's just a really interesting dynamic. And again, some of those women will make really great changes. A lot of them make really great changes. And there's some who make very little change. And it really has to do with where a person's heart at and if they're really ready. So while you might think that the men's group would be a scary group to hold, actually the men are usually on their best behavior. And I've never really had anything significantly scary happen in a men's group, you know. I've had a few times, maybe in all these years, five guys maybe get up and walk out of group. But actually, it's our women who give themselves to act on their emotions who, in the Virtue group, that I've had bigger issues with them, you know, in using their behaviors inappropriately in group. So it's one of my favorite groups to lead, because it is a kind of an interesting, complex thing to deal with, honoring the fact that they have been victimized, but at the same time holding them accountable for their abusive behaviors.
Yeah. I'll be honest with you. I didn't even hear about the Virtue group until recently. Has that been out for a while?
Yeah, we started that back in 2003. So we've been doing that a long time as well, and
yeah.
And serve, you know, the again corrections and DHS and voluntary clients as well.
So those
programs though are not as easily available to people because we're only in a couple states with those programs.
With Mankind.
Yeah, with Mankind and Virtue, we're in Oregon and we're up in Northeast Washington. with mankind and with virtue. And her journey is spread out across further.
Yeah. Do you find that in mankind, you said that the they're court appointed at times to attend mankind? Correct?
Uh-huh.
Do you find that that
yes,
sometimes might be a problem because it is faith-based, or is it just an option for men, whether it's faith-based or not?
It's given to them as an option, and I like it best because we work in multiple counties. I like it best when they give them a sheet with the different providers on it, because I feel like that's a more fair and just way. Occasionally, a probation officer needs to specifically pick a program for specific reasons. But in counties that don't have that, they should be asking at least if the client is interested in a faith-based program, but they often don't, which makes it difficult for men of faith to find us. And so sometimes, unless they found us online before they went to court, they wouldn't even know that that was an option for them to do. So we have different counties that handle it different ways. And so it really, if they don't give them a list with the different providers, or they don't talk about the fact that there's a faith-based option, those counties we don't get as many referrals from, which is really sad, because the county that does allow the men to choose, we have a lot of groups, and it's a smaller county than other counties that we're in. And I know that we could fill more than the groups that we have in the county that's providing a lot of people to our groups than in the other counties. And, you know, there's some men who specifically really want a faith-based program, and other ones who went to church as children but haven't really returned but chose to come to our program. And so, like I said, they don't have to be active in their faith, but they have to be okay with our faith-based approach. And, you know, I've really watched the guys. It's really cool to watch the aha moments for the guys as much as it is watching the women, as you mentioned, have aha moments as well. But again, there's no guarantees if a man goes to a program that he'll change, because I don't ever want to give that false sense of hope. But at the same time, without the opportunity, he will not change. So he needs the opportunity to be able to go. So some of our women in our groups will say, as a boundary, in order for us to be able to move forward, you need to go through this program. And I usually recommend separation during that time for a period of time, because they're able to make better progress when they're not in the same home.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Separation can be very functional for domestic violence, but not necessary for normal marital conflict.
And are some of the women that go to Virtue, are they, are some of the women that go to Virtue, are they court appointed?
Yes. They're court mandated or sent through Department of Human Services, or they make him voluntarily. We've had women call and say, I need more help than her journey, and I'm finding myself repeating patterns that my parents did with me growing up, and I don't want to do that to my kids, and I want some help with this.
Oh,
or maybe
awesome.
They were in an abusive relationship and they got out of it, and then they're married to someone who's healthy, but they're still repeating poor behaviors because of the past relationship they were in, who've come to us saying, we need help. We need help with making some changes and getting some healing so that we don't continue to have this pattern changed. Because if we can help one parent, we can stop the cycle of abuse for the entire family.
Right.
Because that one person can have a huge influence on changing the child's perspective on relationships and life and how people should treat one another. But when the whole family is dysfunctional, it just cycles every generation.
Yes. And
of course, not everybody who grows up in abuse will repeat it, but many do.
Well, and that's growing up in abuse. Correct. They don't all repeat it, but many do. Not necessarily repeat the abuse, but they have acquired abusive tactics. I find most victims use abuse tactics. It might be something as mild as just raising your voice, trying to get some control back into her life. You know what I mean? Like, leave me alone. I'm tired of this.
Well, most women in an abusive relationship will try everything to try to make it stop. So they'll try everything from being overly compliant to dishing the abuse right back.
Right.
Hoping that then he'll see how it makes her feel and he'll want to stop the behavior.
Right.
But it doesn't work because when you raise your level of power and control with an abuser, because he's about power and control, he has to raise his level of power and control as well. So we had a man who was 6'2", big guy, married to a little gal, maybe 100 pounds, little tiny thing. And they got into an argument and she got angry and she yelled, called names, threw a vase, all abusive things to do. But in doing that, she upped her level of power. So he had to up his level of power. So it actually made her more unsafe because he threw the TV.
Yeah.
So that happens when a victim is in a situation and she's trying to gain power through power and control tactics with an abuser, it actually makes it more dangerous for her. That's not going to be the way you're going to stop someone who's abusive. You've got to start setting boundaries, whether it's simple, easy boundaries to the more difficult boundaries like actual separation. And that's very hard because these women don't want the relationship to end. They want the abuse to end. They love him. They hate the abuse. And so, I mean, nobody gets in a relationship for it to end. And so these women work harder than anybody else to save their relationships. They go to all the conferences. They go to counseling. They read the self-help books. And none of those things will fix it because she cannot change herself to fix his behavior. He has to choose to do that for himself. So all she can do is set boundaries like this cannot continue. And if it does, then this is what's going to happen. Excuse me. So boundaries
now,
with consequences is what we teach in her journey.
That a little bit scary because of the fact that if one of her boundaries is this is not going to continue and I'm going to leave, and knowing that when you leaving and after you've left, 70% of all deaths occur during that time, does it not raise the consequence for her as well?
Absolutely, because the statistic is 75% of homicides happen after a woman leaves. And that's even if there wasn't physical abuse going on prior to that, because he's just lost control.
Right.
So, you know, a lot of women start with smaller boundaries, like if you call me names, I'm going to leave and go to my friend's house. That would be a boundary with a consequence.
Yeah.
And, of course, these guys are boundary breakers, so that doesn't normally work, but they try it, and they try different things while they're in a group where they're getting support. So if she feels like, and she's worked up to this point, or she doesn't even have to work up to this point, she just knows that the only way to truly be safe is to leave, then she needs to safety plan. And safety planning, there's all kinds of safety plans online. We do safety planning as well in order so that when she does leave, she's done what she can to be as safe as she possibly can. But I can tell you, most of these guys are bullies, and if she gets a restraining order or a protection order, depending on what your state you're in, it's called different things. If she's able to get that, most of the guys, if she holds them to the consequence, and he texts her when he's not supposed to, now that she has this protection order in place, if she calls the police and holds him accountable for him breaking that restraining order or protection order, these guys don't usually continue to do that because they don't really believe you're going to hold to the boundaries because you never really have.
Right.
So that's one thing. But for some guys, there is a small percentage of guys who a piece of paper means absolutely nothing. These sociopaths are really a small percentage, but they're dangerous. And so those women, it's not probably wise to get a protection order. It's more about safety planning to leave. They even have federal programs where women can change their name and their Social Security number to help them to stay safe from the really most dangerous of dangerous men out there.
Yeah.
And we've dealt with some of those women who've had to go through that process.
And your advocates know how to do all that to help these girls out?
Well, we have with packets that we hand out at our groups, we have a safety plan in there. And when we have somebody in group that we know is in danger, we will take the time to review bits and pieces of it because there's safety planning for in the moment if you need to leave at a moment's notice. Safety planning if you have a little bit more time to gather things. Safety planning for your children in school. Safety planning in your work place. So there's different ways to safety plan. And there's also in most every major city and county, there's some domestic violence agency out there that can also help walk her through that process. But this is very, very hard to do without the support of others, without regaining some of who you are before you take those kinds of steps. These are very big, courageous steps to take.
Right.
And again, it's not what the women wanted. They wanted the happy marriage. They wanted the happy family. And it's heartbreaking when you have to let go of that dream.
Right.
And that's
a
grieving process.
Yeah, it's probably the hardest process. But what I noticed about your program is it lends itself to keeping families together. Am I right on that?
Well, we really believe that we are about the individual.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to be that way. Otherwise, we're not putting victim safety first.
The mm-hmm.
victim safety and offender accountability, those are the order that things go in. So we're always going to work with the individual. Sure, you know, God, is a God of reconciliation, but there are times that you cannot reconcile because the other person is not willing to make the changes that will make it safe for you emotionally and physically in your relationship. And so I give this example in our lesson on forgiveness, that forgiveness really isn't about the other person at all. And
mm-hmm.
as you know, if you've gone through this lesson, we talk about what forgiveness isn't. So we had a young pastor in our church, an interim pastor, and he did a sermon on forgiveness. And he did everything that we teach. It was so good. And he's such a humble young man, except for the one thing that he added in there, that it wasn't true forgiveness unless you have reconciliation. And I came to him afterwards, and he was so gracious and so humble to accept my feedback. So I said, let's say you have a friend and he comes over to your house, on and off, you guys visit, you and your wife visit with him. One time comes over when you're not there and he rapes your wife. I said, would you let him back in your home? And he was like, absolutely not. I said, so God would probably still require that you work through forgiveness, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to have ongoing relationship with that person. It is right and appropriate to distance yourself from somebody when it is unsafe.
Yes.
The Bible says prude men or women sees a danger and hides. And so there is right and appropriate times to do that.
Yes.
And even not have relationships. So I have women in my groups who have families who are abusive. And I said, so you're either going to limit your time with them or, a lot of them, because, some cultures are really meshed with their family. And so completely walking away from their family just is not going to happen. So then we talk about how they can limit their time and set some boundaries around their time with their family so that they can still maintain some relationship but really protect themselves in the midst of it.
Yes. Yes. I love everything that you just were talking about. Now, let me ask you this about Oregon. What is your ratio for of homicides? What's the percentage of domestic violence?
Well, nationally, and that's what everybody goes by, is three a day of domestic homicides happen. And it could be more. I think as the police and the corrections entities have gotten better educated. It used to be that they just reported that there was a homicide, but now they're understanding that there was a lot of homicides that they reported just as homicides when really they were domestic violence homicides.
Right.
And what people don't understand about mass murders are four or more people being killed, and I think the stat is 52% of all mass murders are domestic violence. So that's a huge issue. And
that
yet,
is.
When you think about physical violence, it's scary, it's dangerous, it's illegal, but it's actually one of the least forms of abuse used. And so there's a lot of women out there who are suffering abuse who will never raise to that level. There's some women who will never experience physical abuse in their relationship because the abuser never has to do that to get his way. He can use all the other tactics and even be scary, like throwing things and punching holes in walls. He doesn't ever have to touch her if he can convince her that he's dangerous.
Right, right,
so,
right. And
so,
scare,
that's, it's a huge deal. So why are we? you know, when you talk about people dying from abuse, the reality is that millions more women are dying very slow deaths from the stress of being in an abusive relationship, because our body releases cortisol when we're under that stress. And that cortisol was meant to save us when we were being chased by a saber-toothed tiger. But it wasn't meant to be being flushed in our system, you know, all day, every day. And we have a place in our brain called hippocampus that goes to counteract the cortisol, but it can't keep up. And so cortisol is actually very damaging to your organs. It eats away at them. So there's studies that have been done in the health community that show there's health issues that are directly related to being in domestic violence. And the longer a woman has been in abuse, the more long-term her health issues are. And we have seen that women, when get out of abuse, how much their health actually improves. Some women have lifelong issues that continue, but still their health improves when they're no longer under that type of stress. And they're studying how babies, as women who are in abuse, their babies are being born with really high levels of cortisol. And you can actually die from having too high levels of cortisol in your system. So wow. Babies are being born with these high levels of cortisol because it's flushing through the woman's body as she's carrying this baby, because she's in a constant state of stress and fear all the time. And so it's a very damaging thing. So it's more like, for most women who are in abuse, it's more like taking a little bit of poison every day, not enough to really be noticeable, not until you're very late in the game, when you feel like you've lost all your support system, you've lost your health, you've lost your finances, and you really feel like you've lost everything. That women, those are the women who'll come to us who are just so destitute and feel like there was no way out. Now they found a way out, but they need help and they need support. And again, we just get to watch them come back to life again and realize that why they've been telling them all this time, nothing, there's no way for this to change. There's no way out. There really is a way out. It just isn't always the way you want it to look or be. So we have a saying, we always have choices. We may not like the choices we have, but we always have choices. And unfortunately, sometimes leaving is not the choice the women want to take. And
right.
So,
well, I found
or they feel like there's just no options.
Yeah. When I found the abuse was actually worse, it was exponentially worse after I left.
Yes. We usually tell women they should expect that because he's lost control.
Right.
So he's gonna up his level of control, and so it usually gets worse before it gets better. I'm always honest with the women about this isn't going to be easy. It's going to be messy, but it's not going to change if you keep doing what you're doing. And you have to be willing to do something different than what you've done before in order for it to change. So, yeah, it's really, really hard in the beginning. That's why you need a group around you who's supporting you and praying for you and affirming you for your experience and the good choices that you're setting, boundaries that you're setting, that will really help you through a time like that when you're having to make really hard decisions.
Right, right. It is. And you need someone that understands completely. And that's what I found with, it was absolutely a godsend that when I found ARMS, I can't tell you, because I had people that I could talk freely with, I could relate to. They would help me with, you know, whatever it was that I needed, which was just psychological and emotional support, really, by that time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I didn't know about it earlier. I think it was like 2 or 3 months after I left, and I was a total basket case because the emotional abuse continued. It actually got worse, far worse than when
right.
I was with him. It's almost not worth leaving. And I think that's what some of the women think, man, it's almost not worth leaving. It's just
yep.
worse when you leave.
Right. Well, and, you know, and statistically women leave 7 to 8 times before they leave for good, because they're hoping that when she leaves that he's going to get a clue and he's going to finally understand, he's going to get help and he's going to follow through with the promises he gave. But,
right.
You know, usually it's just him being nice is just another form of controlling behavior, controlling her back into relationship or making her feel like she overreacted or whatever a tactic he chooses, or gift giving, or, you know, he buys her a car. I mean, He does things that she's been asking him to do for years. Like he makes an appointment to go see a counselor, you know, just the things that she's been hoping for. And so she moves back home and then he stops immediately because he got what he wanted. And so he was just using the behaviors to control her back into relationship. And that's very typical. So I usually tell women that when you separate, plan at least 6 months because anybody can behave well for a while. And he'll go through a range of different tactics. But if he hasn't made true change, he will eventually go back to being angry. And so these change for men and women who use abusive behaviors is very, very hard, but especially for these men who have been taught that it's their job as a man to be in control and to rule, and that if they're not willing to do that, they're not real men. And so changing them to understand, what does God have to say about what leadership actually looks like? Jesus came, he said, "I came to serve, not to be served." That's completely backwards to the way our society thinks.
Right.
And so the man is meant to be the one who's laying his life down to benefit his family. It's not about his family serving him. It's about him serving his family. But when the guys get a hold of this, they're shocked when they come back to group and they tell us how they actually put it into practice and what a different response they got and how cool it was. And they just realize that how wrong their thinking was. And it begins to create that change in them that we want to see. And like I said, if we don't help those who are using the abuse and we're only saving those who are being victimized, those abusers are just going to go out and make more victims. We've got to be working on the entire family. So while we're not always about unification, that would be great if they're willing to do the work that needs to be done. We're really about helping the individual. So even if their relationship doesn't make it, we want them to be healthy, have healthy relationships, and stop their abusive behavior.
Right.
Because most of these guys are going to get involved in another relationship if this one ends. And so we don't want another victim from...
Or they're already in another relationship.
And a lot of the women... Yeah. Well, yeah. And you know, it's interesting, though, that, you know, we've had quite a few guys talk about how their ex-wives have... I feel a little angry that, you know, now that he's finally making change and she's in another relationship, that she's mad that he didn't do that when she was with him, you know, because that's what she wanted in the beginning, you know?
Right.
And even though they're happy, but at the same time, there's that sense of anger over, why didn't he do that when I was with him? But the guys don't come to us generally. They don't generally just decide, oh, I think I have a problem. They don't think they have a problem. They think they're victims of the problem. And so there has to usually be almost always external pressure from either the court systems or Department of Human Services or his wife or his church or something that says you need help. And we've had a few guys, you know, they had an incident where they were physically abusive. The police weren't called, but it scared them that they had reached that level, and they went online and found us, and they came in going, I need help. Because abuse never starts with physical. It always starts with the emotional and verbal forms of abuse, the ones that people don't recognize as abusive, because everybody's using it, you know, to some degree. Does not make it okay, though.
Right.
Doesn't matter if it's one time or a pattern.
Right.
Yep.
Right, I agree. Okay, another thing I was going to ask you about, and I'm not sure if you're a part of this or not, but in Oregon, there's certain counties that have DV councils, pretty much. Have you ever experienced any of those?
I've actually been. I'm on several. We're connected with several county domestic violence councils, and I've actually chaired the council, co-chaired in a couple different counties, the councils. So as an agency, you know, especially as a faith-based agency, it's really important for us to be a part of the larger domestic violence community, because the faith community has so poorly handled this issue, and the domestic violence community as a whole doesn't really trust the faith community, because a lot of times pastors will because they don't understand abuse, will do things that make it actually more unsafe. They'll send her back into an abusive situation. And I don't believe it because it's because they don't care. I believe it's because they don't, they're not educated around this issue.
Right.
And I believe that every seminary, every Bible college, and every counseling degree should require an entire course on domestic violence.
Right.
Because they're the ones who are running into them.
Can you share with me a little bit about those councils? They include DAs, law enforcement. Is this like a community group?
Yeah, it's a community group. So you have a lot of your county people there. So your DAs, your police officers, your a judge usually, district attorneys, prosecutors, things like that. But then you also have any agency that deals with domestic violence. So you could have a crisis line person there. You could have a nonprofit like ours sitting at the table. They're usually open to the community. Usually anybody can go. You may not be a member, but anybody can go. We have mediation services at these. We have child protective services or organizations that deal with working with children who have experienced or witnessed abuse. At these councils as well. So it's a broad spectrum of people at this, and you know that's what you want. The key words years ago when I first started was you want a coordinated community response. The whole community needs to come together and work together to end this. And
right.
It can't just be one group of people or one gender of people. It's going to take everybody working together to make it work.
Right. And what is it that you do at these meetings? Do you have learning opportunities? I mean, teaching opportunities. What is it that you do exactly?
Well, normally at most of them, you go around and you introduce yourself and you tell them what organization you're with and you make any announcements about your organization or events coming up. And then after that, they have a time where they'll usually have a topic. They usually all have agendas, so there's an agenda set. There's usually an executive council within the council itself, and the executive council sets the agenda, and the executive council tries to look for topics and things that are relevant with what's going on in society and what's important during that time. So, you know, there's been a lot of talk about domestic violence and immigration and the problems that's caused. So, you know, whatever is like kind of the hot topics of the area and the time, those are often the topics. So there is some learning time. But part of the beauty of having councils is the networking so that you can build a relationship with someone and find out what they do so that you can go, oh, that's where I can send somebody for that. Because no one is the whole answer. We are just one piece of the puzzle.
Right.
And there's things that we don't do. So we things that we don't do. Like we don't do housing, you know, so we don't do shelter work. So
right.
we need relationship with those shelters so that we know where we can send them and the process for sending them and all that. So it's really a great way for all of us to get to know each other. And when you really get to know someone, even if you have negative feelings, like if somebody is biased against a faith programs in general, and they get to know me or somebody from the organization and realize I'm just as human as they are, you know, it kind of undoes some of those maybe attitudes that they might have that are negative so that you can have relationship and actually work together.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I know that several of the counties in Oregon have that. I know that Douglas County was extremely resistant towards that and refused to have that, but that would have been such an addition. What do law enforcement and the DAs and judges, what did they talk about when they were there? Is it just for information for them to figure out where to send people and how to help victims and abusers?
Well, if they've been slotted to speak about something, then they would speak. Otherwise, we all are there just as a community to hear whatever topic is going on so that we can all be on the same page and be informed. So that's, you know, they, it's great to have a judge there because a lot of judges haven't received a lot of education around domestic violence, and you want a really informed judge around domestic abuse so they can really understand the issues well when they're sitting on the bench, especially if they are in charge of a domestic violence caseload, because some counties have their own domestic violence teams. So the police officers have their own domestic violence teams. The district attorneys have their own domestic violence teams. They have a courtroom that does just domestic violence, you know, things like that, which makes it really good because that group of people are specialized in domestic violence and are better
right.
at handling the issues well than just a general family court where they go in and the judge isn't informed. And the district attorneys are
right.
informed. Now in a lot of the larger counties, they have their own victim advocates within their system. So police have their own victim advocates. The district attorney's office has their own victim advocates. So, you know, there's more of that going on all the time, which is good.
Yes.
That's what we want to see happen.
Yes. Yes. And the advocates, I know you're on several different ones. Do they, the police advocates, do they go out with police and help in the help with the victim?
Some counties have that, yeah. Some counties have a domestic violence response team, is often what they're called. And they will go
yeah.
out, they'll get called in, and sometimes they're volunteers that they train. They'll have somebody on staff who actually oversees them and trains them, and they'll carry a pager or something like that, and they'll have hours, set hours that they are going to be available, and oftentimes it's the middle of the night, and they will go out so they can just be there to be with the victim and help support her. And often when the victim's in trauma, it's really hard to do much of anything. You know, she can't really absorb a lot of things when she's in trauma. Sometimes some of
right.
those teams do a follow-up phone call within 24 hours because when things begin to calm down, the victim often begins to remember more as well.
Yes, I noticed
so,
that
yeah.
happened to me as well. Going into shock,
yeah.
I couldn't remember anything, and I was actually, when I came out, was just surprised that, number one, I couldn't remember anything, but
yeah.
number two, that it even happened to me.
right. Yeah. It's and that's
okay,
typical,
so
and it's part of the trauma training that we've received.
And those are I've
yeah.
heard of those groups. Los Angeles has several of them. I've seen them in Ohio, Iowa, all over the United States, actually. And they're called domestic abuse response teams, I guess. And they're volunteers.
Oh.
They go out with law enforcement and work hand in hand with law enforcement collaboratively.
Right.
Yep. And I've seen a lot
mm-hmm.
of literature on that as well that indicates that they have more convictions, that they actually arrest the right person instead of the victim, and that they just have a lot better, they actually start to lower the domestic abuse in the area.
Mm. Yeah.
Which is, you know, one of my
mm-hmm.
biggest fears in Utah, they've gone from 33% to 40% of all homicides are domestic abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, not
and
all
some
of them
that might
labeled.
Be that they're actually doing a. Some of them, some of that number could be the fact that they're actually recognizing homicides as domestic violence homicides where they did not before. So,
right.
you know what I mean? It's like, because years ago they didn't. I mean, domestic violence homicide wasn't even a phrase. You know, so
right.
now
right.
they're having a better understanding. But there are stress tends to increase homicides. In 2010, when you know, big downturn in the economy, people are losing jobs. Oregon had a 40% increase in domestic violence homicides. So stress definitely makes it worse. Holidays are worse.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even the Super Bowl day is one of the worst domestic violence days of the year.
Is it really
considered a men's holiday? Yeah, it's almost like a men's holiday, and so don't bother
yeah.
me while I'm having my beers and watching my football.
Right.
So that's a day that there's usually a lot of calls. So, but stress definitely is a factor, and also how depressed someone is. But there's all kinds of assessments out there too on how dangerous a situation is, but nothing, you know, is perfect as far as that. But there's definitely some earmarks that we see.
They use the lethality assessment here, the LAP they call it. But I have a couple more questions. I know I got off topic a little bit. I just saw that you were from Multnomah, and I know they had a really good council there for domestic violence. So that's why I asked that question.
Yeah.
But my
I actually live outside of Multnomah County, but not far. So that's one of the councils I go to.
Yeah. One of the questions I have is those that want to be a part of ARMS, the other two, Virtue or Mankind. So not ARMS, I'm sorry. Her Journey, Virtue or Mankind. Who would they contact or how would they contact you guys? Or would they don't have a program there?
Right. So we have groups in multiple states, but we're not all the way across the United States, but we're working to do some expansion here soon. So if you're needing a group, so someone who's listening to this, a woman who's listening saying, hey, I need this group to help me heal, we have a live conference call that we do, and they would call our office, and I don't know if you want me to give that number or not. I can do that if you want me to, or go to our website and get that phone number. So our office number is 503-846-9284. And our website is ARMS Online, that's ARMSonline.org. And we have How Healthy Is Your Relationship Evaluation on there. We have a video of one of the women who's gone through our program. It talks about all our programs that we have in there. So we can serve from afar. We even have women call in from other countries. On this conference call, we're talking about maybe adding another one, an evening one, which would work for people who are in places that the time difference is quite opposite from ours. That would serve them as well. And then starting at the end of March, we're going to start providing training online for people who are not close enough to train with us locally so that they could lead a Her Journey in their area. It could be an individual, it could be a church, it could be a community or organization. And right now we're partnering with the Union Gospel Rescue Mission, which is rebranding the City Gate, and they are getting ready to advertise it out to all of their national and in Canada, U.S. and Canada, missions, encouraging them to take training through ARMS, be able to offer Her Journey. And then we hope to, at the end of this year, to also be able to have Mankind training for that as well. We can't get people to state standard because every state has their own standards, but this could be something used, would be appropriate to use with a group of men if it's done right, could have the same outcomes that we have in our program. And in Mankind, when we, every year we give them the county, the names and date of birth of the men who completed the program. We go back 5 years every year to find out what's our recidivism rate. This is, you know, the illegal forms of abuse. And we're at a 5% recidivism rate, which is way low. I mean, most organizations aren't even close to that. So it doesn't mean they've stopped all their forms of abuse, but the illegal forms, that's pretty impressive. So we're hoping to be able to push that out and Virtue. Recidiva, meaning that within 5 years of guys completing, because we always go back 5 years, we have them check to see who got rearrested for domestic violence. And our rates on that are at 5%.
So in other words, you have a
95% that's really low
success rate.
In terms of recidivism, yes. Of what would be criminal
going back into
domestic
it.
Violence. Yeah.
So
they may
really
still
good.
Be verbally abusive, but if we're helping that much in that area, then hopefully it's helping enough, a lot in the other areas as well. And Virtue, we're hoping again also push that out pretty close to the same time as we do Mankind. But those programs, Mankind and Virtue, currently are only being held in kind of the Portland, Oregon metro area and in the northeast, Washington, Spokane, inland northwest is what the area would be. where we offer that program, those two programs, Virtue and Mankind. We offer her journey in those areas as well as other states and in Mexico and in Kenya. And we have her journey translated into Spanish, Russian, and Kiswahili. So, you know, we're doing what we can to reach out.
Yeah, do you have her journey in Utah, Nevada, Colorado?
We do not. So those would be a live conference call for the women. We have actual some recorded sessions as well. So if they can't make a live conference call, but I tell you, live conference call is still better than just listening to it, because you're still having the support of other women. I wasn't really sure the conference call would work, but I found that as I was doing it, because when we first started, I was leading it, that the women, they'd get online and they'd be chatting with one another before I even got online with them. And they built relationships with one another, just like you would in a regular group. So, you know, it was really, it's been really a great thing. And I'm really glad that we've been able to serve women that way.
Yeah. Yeah, we became
so we'll
really
be expanding.
Close because,
I see expanding.
Yeah, good. Yeah, I
with
think
our
it's a
online
great
training,
program.
It's going to be. Yeah, we're going to be able. The her journey will be pretty easy. It's about a 12-week program to go through the training to become her journey leader, and there's some qualifiers and some processes you have to go through to get that, become a certified leader. But it's going to be available for people who are in a healthy place. Whether they've experienced abuse or not, they can lead this program and do a good job, because we've seen it done.
We had a great leader in Roseburg. I know that. I don't know. I'm not there now, so I don't know if she's still there. But so that was it was awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, I think that's all the questions I have. Is there anything more that you'd like to share?
I would just say a word of encouragement to both men and women that if you're experiencing abuse, you know, that there's help out there for you. And we usually encourage the men who are victims of abuse to actually seek one-on-one counseling. There aren't usually groups for men. And if you're someone who uses abusive behaviors, to know that you're not alone in that. There's a lot of shame in that sometimes, and actually admitting that that's the way you've been, to know that it takes a very strong person, and people are usually have a lot of respect for someone who's willing to reach out and get help for the problems that they're facing. And you can be not only change, but become an agent of change for others. And that's a pretty exciting thing to be able to do that for another person.
Yeah. No, I
agree. And I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to share.
Well, again, armsonline.org. Yeah, you've done so much for so many people, and you did so much for me that you're one of the first persons I thought of, because I'm like, oh my gosh, how do I get her? I mean, you're like this big executive director of this big company, so I really didn't. I thought I'd get handed down to somebody else.
No,
I think it's absolutely wonderful.
We're not as big as you think.
But what I really like is it's free for women if they want to attend, and but the Mankind one, that they have to pay for, is that correct?
That's right, and even though there's not Mankind in every state and everywhere, there are programs like it. They just won't be, most of them won't be faith-based. It's really hard to find a faith-based men's intervention program, but not all cities and not all states have them, but there's a lot that do, and it's worth a drive if you have to drive. We've had men drive as far as three hours each way to come to group before. So if you're really motivated and you really want to change, you know, it's an investment in your future and the future of your relationships.
And is Virtue
to seek out help
as well?
It is not free. That is fee-based as well. It's very, very ran very similar to our men's program, with just a few nuances that are different, because secondary aggressors have different motivations behind why they use abuse. It doesn't make it okay, but it has different nuances, so it's a little bit different. But some states aren't even sending women to programs, which I think is too bad, because this program is super helpful for women who have never been given the tools and have never known what to do with the anger they feel on the inside and are angry women doing angry behaviors. And I've had a woman who went through the program who her grandmother told her, because she had made such great change, her grandmother told her, "This is the first time I've been with you where you didn't seem like you were angry." So she'd learned to heal and to make changes and to remain calm. And I just watched this gal make just incredible changes. And she figured out on her own as we were going through the lessons that this was a cyclical thing. She was repeating the patterns her mother had modeled for her.
Let me ask you this question. We have not necessarily a problem, but it occurs, and I've heard about it on several occasions in this area and in other areas, and I'm sure it happens everywhere. We have victims arrested instead of abusers, and victims sometimes end up having to take domestic violence classes. Would you recommend take the virtue or the her journey? Which one do you think would be more beneficial?
She would have to, if she were in our county, she would have to take virtue because that would be what the state would require of her.
Right.
But if she's in the program and we find that, and we've only had a few women that we've had to do this with, that she leans so far to the victim side, she does not relate at all with anything, we will actually contact probation and say, hey, we really need to move her over to her journey because this is not the appropriate program for her. And they usually accept our advice on that. And then there's other women who, really they don't have super big patterns of like abusive, like really serious abuse. I had a woman come from another state. So she had no choice. She had to go through it. And her biggest abusive behavior, controlling behavior, was the silent treatment. She did it all the time.
The what?
And I tell you, she did the silent treatment. Giving the silent treatment is a way to control conversation.
Right.
And so that's what she wrote about in her journals and that we have them fill out. And she did really good work. And I tell you, every woman, even when they came in, really being the victim in the relationship, but they had used some behaviors that were inappropriate. And they often, when the police come, they tell the truth. They expect their partners to tell the truth, too, and they don't. And so she told the truth, and she left marks on him, so they have to arrest someone, so they arrest her. The abusers don't often tell the truth, but the victims...
No, that's what I meant. I said it wrong.
Aggressors.
Yeah, abusers lie, and victims tell the truth. And so that's why women get arrested, or the victims get arrested.
Right.
Because they tell the truth, and the abusers lie.
But I can tell you that those women generally do really well in the program, and they usually are... No one's happy about coming initially, but by the time they're done, they're all super thankful for the program and what they've gained from it.
It is. What I really like is it's lesson propelled.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
But unlike her journey, it's not a process group. Virtue and Mankind are process groups. They are groups where we have discussions and talk about things. So it's still educational, but it's very much discussion-based.
Oh, it is discussion-based? It's not propelled through
the
lessons?
Virtue and Mankind. But yes, we have lessons that we go through, but there's discussion questions along the way within the lesson.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I think all states need that, just saying.
Well, I know up in the Inland Northwest area, they do not. They don't have it in every state, and they don't require it in every state. So, things are changing, but it's a slow boat, slow movement.
Right. Well, I know they require domestic violence classes probably in every state, and this would just be an addition to that, correct? So they could choose this class or that one, correct?
Well, some states don't offer, okay, you can have states that offer both men's and women's intervention, but you'll have some counties that don't have any either because they're small, they're rural, and there's no programs for them to go to, which is sad.
Right.
Yeah.
Because then that makes it worse because they can't get the help.
Right. And so then prosecutors can't do anything but maybe give a few days in jail, or if it's a felony, send them to prison for a time, which isn't necessarily the best answer either.
No. No, it's not going to
Sometimes
fix it.
It is. Sometimes it is, but not all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, so you think sitting in jail at times fixes the problem? does it help sometimes?
Sending them in jail has shown that it definitely cuts down on using physical abuse. They may figure out other ways to be abusive without getting caught in the system again. But there are some really dangerous guys who should be in prison, and there's other guys that prison will just make them better abusers because they're hearing it from other guys what to do. But, you can't control all that. This is a very complicated issue. There aren't any easy answers for this.
Right, yeah. I find they're just getting better at not getting caught. Yeah.
Sometimes that's the case. And even they can use even what we teach in a controlling way.
Yeah. I'm thinking anything we learn can be used in a controlling way, probably.
Anything. Anything can be used in a controlling way.
Yeah.
So, yep.
All right. Well, I thought
you should. So, if they want more information, we have lots on our website.
Oh, go over that again. Share all of that first.
I said we have a lot of helps on our website. We have we have some PDFs you can download, some information about types of abuse and the safety plan I was talking about, and just some general things that are just there for help. And, anybody's welcome to call and have a conversation with us.
And your website address,
we're more than happy to do that. .org.
Okay, your website.
.org.
.org. I'm sorry.
ArmsOnline.org. Yeah.
And the phone number again?
503-846-9284.
Oh, thank you so much. I hope we get this across the United States real soon.
We're working on it.
I know you guys are. You're doing an amazing job. Thank you so much for all that you do.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
You have a good night.
Okay, you too. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, I just want to thank everybody for listening tonight. And thanks, Stacy, for joining us. And we learned a lot about her wonderful organization. And can't say I'm a graduate. I went through all the lessons on numerous occasions, and it's not uncommon. Women go through it several times. I think I went through it 4 times before I left Oregon. And I'd actually like to probably facilitate some of those because they are very good. And so I highly recommend that you contact her if you're interested. She does do an online for those that don't have it in their state. And they're working on some other processes as well. I want to thank my listeners for listening tonight and learning more of how we can help each other and help ourselves in recovery. Next week, I will have an awesome person. It is Adele from New Zealand, and she's going to tell us a little bit about what she went through and the things that helped her the most to get through her abuse. And she was abused as a child. And she did not continue the cycle, and she's going to share with you the things that she did to not continue the cycle. So please listen next week, Thursday at 6 p.m. Pacific, 7 Mountain, 8 Central. And please have a good night and stay safe.